Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Krishnasyananta Viryasa. Krishnasyananta Viryasa. Krishnasyananta Viryasa. This virya means strong. Very, you know, I know a devotee in something. Yeah, it means very, very strong. And so this is talking about how Krishna is very strong, unlimited, ananta, unlimited. Yoga,
yoga
maya,
maya,
mahodayam,
mahodayam,
yoga maya, mahodayam,
yoga maya, mahodayam,
yoga maya, mahodayam,
yoga maya, mahodayam.
Krishnasya nanta viryasya,
Krishnasya nanta viryasya,
yoga maya, mahodayam,
yoga maya, mahodayam,
muhur, drishtva,
rishir,
abhud, muhur drishtva, rishir, abhud, muhur drishtva, rishir, abhud, Vishmito,
Jata,
Kautuka, Vishmito,
Jata,
Kautuka, Vishmito,
Jata,
Kautuka, Nuhu Drishtva, Rishirabhud, Vishmito,
Jata,
Kautuka, Krishnasya nanda viryasya,
yoga maya mahodayam,
mahudrishtva rishirabhud, vishmito jata kotuka. Ananda, unlimited.
Viryasya,
prowess. Yoga maya, of the mystic, deluding energy. Maha, elaborate. Udayam, manifestation. So here, in the verse, we point out how yoga maya is making very, very elaborate arrangements for Krishna's pastimes, and just following through what's gone on in this chapter, and actually the whole 10th canto, there's many, many wonderful arrangements that the Lord's energies are making for his pastimes. Just like we see here in this pastime, that Narad Muni, initially when he came, he visited the palace of Rukmini and Krishna. And then he went to many, many palaces and he was seeing Krishna manifesting all these pastimes. And Narad Muni was kind of very... not bewildered, but he was kind of a little perplexed, because he was seeing how Krishna was manifesting these pastimes in the same form in all these different palaces. He was in one body, yet in many different places. How can we imagine that? You know, we hear of how yogis, they can expand themselves into seven different forms. But it's not the same body. They're seven separate bodies, but all those bodies have to act the same. Yet when Krishna, when he manifested himself in these different palaces, it was the same body, the same person. And the interesting thing is that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains how that even though, like Krishna, he was manifesting in all these different palaces, just like we see when Krishna was manifesting in the Rasa dance, each gopi would only see one Krishna. Or when Lord Chaitanya, when he was dancing at Rath Yatra in Puri, each group of devotees would think that Krishna was with them only, and that he was dancing in the kirtan party where they were. So in the same way, we see that the residents of all the various quarters around the palaces, there were 16,108 palaces that Krishna had. It's actually described there was 900,000 palaces in Gaurika. wonderful place, and just, and all the palaces were made of marble with coral pillars, which were encrusted with Vaidurya money, and the walls had sapphires, and the floors there was emeralds. You can just imagine if something had something like that these days, the thieves would come at night and sort of pry all the jewels out. Yeah? And it's just, you know, extraordinary opulence. And Krishna, he had 16,108 palaces. And when he was manifest in each of these palaces, the residents of that quarter would only see Krishna in their quarter. And they would go and visit the other quarters of the city. They wouldn't see Krishna there. So we see in this way that Krishna enhances their attraction to him. Because why? They're thinking, oh, Krishna, he only appears in our quarter. He doesn't appear in the other quarters. So extraordinary pastimes. So saying here how Yogamaya Mahodayam. These very, very elaborate arrangements the Lord's different Leela Shaktis are making in order to enhance the pastimes. And in order to enhance, you know, I've talked about this point many times, how Krishna manifests his pastimes in this world simply to enhance the devotee's love for him, simply to increase the devotee's attraction. Krishna's making all these arrangements. There's a really nice lecture I heard some years ago where Prabhupada was pointing this out. And he was commenting on the verse, what's that? Puritraya saranam vinaschaya chatushkritam dharma sangstapata sambhastapanataya sambhavem yuge. To annihilate the pious, to annihilate the miscreants and to protect the pious, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion. That'd be interesting if he comes to annihilate the pious. I myself appear millennium after millennium. And Prabhupada was explaining is actually Krishna doesn't come for that purpose, because you know the material energy can easily annihilate the miscreants. Not very difficult. You just see, you know, she just flexes her muscle a little bit, even just a tiny. Look at what's going on in America right now. It's like 500,000 people evacuated just from some fire. Millions and millions of acres of land being burnt out. You know, same thing happened in Australia a couple of years ago. I remember Ramaswamy was up in Canberra when they had the fires up there, and he was telling me he was driving around with Adi Purush in Canberra, and they saw these fireballs, just like literally balls of fire, just shooting across the road. And that's just a small manifestation of her energy. What about when there's a volcano or a tsunami? And that again is a very, very small manifestation of energy. What if the sun blows up? You know, they go, what they call supernova. Could you imagine what that, the power of that would annihilate, just obliterate this entire, you know, section of the galaxy, completely gone. And that again is just a small manifestation of her energy. So to annihilate miscreants is not a problem for the material energy. You can do it very easily. And we see she's got 10 arms, and in each of those arms she's got a weapon: tridents and choppers and swords and spears for killing the demons. She's very good at it. Very, very good at it. So she doesn't need to. Lord Krishna doesn't need to that. And then Prabhupada explains, he said, is paritranaya sarunam, to deliver the devotees. He said, the devotees are already delivered. Why? Because they're constantly engaged in thinking about Krishna. They're constantly engaged in glorifying Krishna's pastimes. So Prabhupada goes on to explain that Krishna manifests simply for this purpose, to give the devotees the opportunities to increase their attraction for Krishna. And that's why he performs these extraordinary pastimes. You just imagine, you know, here is Krishna in Dwarka. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, he doesn't need to worship anyone. Everyone worships him. Everyone without fail worships Krishna. Yet when Narad Muni comes to his palace, he gets down off his... He was sitting on Rukmini's bed. And he gets off, and Rukmini, who's the goddess of fortune, was fanning Krishna herself. And it's described how, in one of the first verses in this chapter, how she had 1,000 maidservants of equal beauty and opulence just waiting to serve her. Just anything she wanted they would do. Yet she was serving Krishna personally. And then when Narad Muni comes, he gets off his... he's sitting on the bed, he gets off the bed, he sits Narad Muni down and he bathes his feet. And then what does he do? He drinks the water from bathing Narad Muni's feet. So... there's many different things going on here. One thing is that the Lord Krishna is showing us how to act, as he describes in the Gita, you know, that if he did not act, then the whole world would be put into ruin. So he's showing us how to respect the devotee of the Lord. That he himself, when the devotee comes to his house, he sits him down and he bathes his feet and he drinks the water. Or sometimes devotees, they sprinkle the water on their head. He's showing us how to respect the devotee. But also, he's acting, it's describing how he's He's carrying out his pastimes just like an ordinary human being. And as also in the Gita, it said, Naham Prakasha Sava Say Yoga Maya Samavrita Mudo Yang Navijananti. That, you know, to bewilder the, I forgot the translation. He's describing how the unintelligent persons, the rascals, the miscreants, can never understand him. You know, even though we see, you know, with someone like Duryodhana, Krishna was standing before him. Yet he couldn't appreciate this was the Supreme Personality of God. Krishna manifested his universal form. And he thought it was just a trick. He tried to capture Krishna. But we know the method to capture Krishna. How does Yasodhamayi capture Krishna? We're singing about it this morning. How does Yasodhamayi capture Krishna? Does she dig a pit and try to catch him? She tries to tie him up, but it's not very successful. She captures him by love. This is the means to capture Krishna. So, and even we see, even like a personality like Dhritarashtra, even though Vidura, Bhishma, Dronacharya, so many great personalities are telling him that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he only partially accepted that. He couldn't surrender. He couldn't give up his attachment to his son. He couldn't give up his attachment to being the king. You know? Even though like Vidura is saying, and like intellectually he's accepting, he's saying, yes, I accept that this is God. You know? Still, he couldn't surrender. But we see someone like Narad Muni, great Vaishnava, a pure unalloyed devotee of Krishna. He's witnessing Krishna's pastimes, and he's actually understanding what's going on here, how Krishna is performing these pastimes just like an ordinary human being. And Narad Muni was just like amazed. It's actually described, I think it's probably about the fourth or the fifth verse, like after he went into Rukmini's palace and Krishna worshipped him, then he walked into the second palace, and he's just like, he was just stunned, and he walked straight out again. Didn't know what to say, didn't know what to do. He was just like, he was completely stunned. Because he was just like amazed. And then it came to the point where he saw Krishna walking around, just like we hear how the Ram, there's that story how Ram, where he would dress himself up as an ordinary person and go around the kingdom just to see the minds of the citizens. And so when Narad Muni saw that, he started to laugh because he think, here is Krishna. He's the all-knowing Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet still, he's walking around the kingdom trying to find out what all the people are thinking, what they're saying, what, you know, what they think about the king, what they think about the government, you know, the government, etc. like that. So Narad Muni was laughing. He thought this was very funny, how Krishna's performing these so-called ordinary activities, you know. And even in some palaces, he's worshipping the brahmanas. The brahmanas coming, he's worshipping the brahmanas. And then he takes their food remnants. Yeah. And we see that, you know, in a few verses previous, Narad Muni is talking about, where is it? Oh, that's right, in verse 30. Is it 38? He's saying, now we understand your mystic potencies, which are difficult to comprehend, even for great mystics. O Supreme Soul, Master of all mystic power, only by serving your feet have I been able to perceive your powers. And then the purport says, according to the Acharyas, this verse indicates that even great mystics like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva cannot fully comprehend the mystic power of the Supreme Lord. And we see that happen in the Brahma Vimohan Lila. It's described by the Acharyas how, you know, Brahma was watching the pastimes of Krishna because he heard that this was actually his master. Lord Krishna had come down as a cowherd boy. And he thought he wanted to have a look to witness the pastimes of Krishna. And then he saw him playing with the cowherd boys in the forest. And, you know, as boys do, they were stealing each other's lunch and throwing them backwards and forwards and things like that. And then finally they sat down, they had lunch. And then Lord Krishna was stealing remnants from the plates of the other cowherd boys. And then Lord Brahma, he became bewildered. He couldn't understand this. He just couldn't understand the extraordinary pastimes of Krishna. And therefore he thought, no, this can't be my Lord. This can't be Krishna. Therefore he stole the calves and the cowherd boys, because he was doubting that this was the Lord. He wanted to test him out. And then, of course, we understand the whole pastime, how Krishna then manifested himself for 1 year as identical calves and cowherd boys, and no one knew the difference. And again, it's interesting because you look at all these pastimes. One of the primary factors, one of the primary things that's going on there, is that Krishna's just acting in a way to enhance their love. Because we see that for 1 year, all these cowherd boys were actually Krishna. So the parents of all those cowherd boys got the opportunity to have a direct relationship with Krishna. They could have him at home, they could feed him and bathe him and dress him and all the things they would normally do for their child, they were doing for Krishna directly. And all the cows, they also had Krishna was drinking milk from their udders, and they were licking him and all these different sorts of things, just like they would do for their own calves. And even all the gopis, as described by some of the acharyas, how that all the gopis married the cowherd boys during that period, because previously they were performing this Katyayani Brata, which starts sometime this month. There's a verse where they're praying Katyayani Mahiyahe Mahe Mahayogini Dishri. They're praying that my dear Katyayani, they're praying to Katyayani that you please make the son of Nandamaraj, Krishna, our husband. They're praying, they want him as their husband. And it's said by some acharyas how during that year that actually Krishna became their husband. So we see that Krishna performs these wonderful pastimes. And as Rupa Goswami points out in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, how Krishna is very, very expert, because with one act, Brahma steals the calves and the cowherd boys, and then Krishna manifests himself in the calves and cowherd boys, yet he's achieving so many different purposes by that one act. You know, he's increasing, you know, the relationship with the calves and the cows, between the calves and the cows, with him. He's increasing the residents of Vrindavan, their love for him. All the gopis are getting married to him during that year. And he's also humbling the pride of Lord Brahma. And that's just, you know, some of the more obvious things. Obviously, so many things are going on. And this is the nature, as it's pointing out here, this Mahodayam. How Yoga Maya, Krishna's Lila Shaktis, his very Shaktis, are making all these different arrangements to facilitate Krishna's pastimes. And we see, you know, like just like it's described how in Vrindavan, how Krishna's different potencies, they make all these wonderful arrangements for his different pastimes. So they're decorating the forest with so many different flowers and arranging the various, you know, breezes, you know, laden with sweet smells, and, you know, because in Vrindavan during those times, of course, you won't see any waterfalls in Vrindavan now, at least with these eyes, I'm not seeing. But, you know, someone who has the vision will see that in Vrindavan, there are so many wonderful waterfalls on Govardhan Hill. And so, as is the nature of a waterfall, I know, I'm sure you've all been around waterfalls, many, many fine drops of water, are in the air around waterfalls. And then the breeze comes and it picks up those drops of water. And it blows those drops of water. It makes a very, very cooling, pleasing atmosphere. I remember recently when I was in America, we drove from Toronto through to Boston. And on the way we went through Buffalo. So Buffalo is right next to the Niagara Falls. And it was quite a warm day. And, you know, because Niagara Falls is just unbelievable. It's like, you know, it's just incredible. I mean, it's so powerful. And like, you know, even if you were standing, like, you know, 100 meters from the fall, it was like standing in the rain. There was just so much mist in the air. You couldn't get close to it without getting drenched. And they even have this thing where you go and look at it and they give you these raincoats to wear. You know, so much water coming. And it's like that, you know, when you get the drops of water on your body, very, very cooling. So again, the Yoga Maya potency is making this arrangement for Krishna's pastimes. And we see sometimes in the temples in Vrindavan that during the summer they have fountains in front of the deities. So that, like you go to Radha Raman or something like that, they have a nice arrangement there in the courtyard that it's sort of designed in such a way that there's always a breeze. By this courtyard arrangement creates a breeze there. So they have one nice festival there where they take Ramanji out. It's actually Snan Yatra. All the temples in North India, they follow Puri. They follow the festivals of Puri. So, particularly major festivals, they have this Snan Yatra, and what they do is they have water tanks up on the roof, and the boys in the morning, they bring all the water, they bring water from the Jamuna in clay pots, and they put it into the water tank. This is in the middle of summer, when it's unbelievably hot in Vrindavan. And they have this, like, shower in the courtyard. If you go there, you'll see the pipe hanging down. It's just like a shower head. Nothing fancy, it's just a shower. And they turn the tap on, and Ramanji, he stands under the shower and he gets the water on him for, you know, a few hours just to cool him down. Very, very nice festival. And so we see that, you know, in the temples there, they make various arrangements for Krishna so he can be cooled. So we see Yoga Maya is making all these different arrangements, just like it's being described here, how she's making these wonderful arrangements in Dwarkapuri, just so Krishna can enjoy all these different pastimes. Okay, muhu. Repeatedly. Drishtva. Having witnessed. Rishi. The sage, Narada. Abhut. Became. Vishmita. Amazed. Jatakotuka. Filled with wonder. Translation. Having repeatedly seen the vast mystic display of Lord Krishna, whose power is unlimited, the sage was amazed and filled with wonder. Please repeat. Having repeatedly seen the vast mystic display of Lord Krishna, whose power is unlimited, the sage was amazed and filled with wonder. See, this is something that I find never ceases to amaze me. Like I was just speaking with this gentleman recently. He's some kind of Christian. I'm not sure. He was telling me the church he goes to, which I'd never heard of before. And he was talking about how there's all these different laws in the material world and how the Lord also must follow these laws. They can't understand how, because Krishna is limited, there's nothing he cannot do. Like one time, I think it was Allen Ginsberg was challenging Srila Prabhupada, and he was saying, is your Krishna so great that he can make a mountain that he can't lift? So what do you think Prabhupada said? Huh? Yeah, that yes, he can, and then he will lift it. Because the nature of Krishna is something that is unlimited. What does that mean? It means it's constantly growing, constantly increasing, without limit, without bounds. And it's growing so much that you cannot estimate how much it's growing. This is truly the nature of it. Just like you say, one of the earliest concepts that I found kind of really interesting in mathematics was the perception of infinity. Because it just means it never stops. It just constantly grows and grows and grows. And Krishna's even beyond that. You know, like any material concept we have, any means we have to try to understand Krishna is too limited. Because we are finite. We have a finite capacity for comprehension. We can only understand so much. Of course, some people have a greater capacity than others. Just like, you know, some people can recite every sloka in the Bhagavatam from memory. Some people can, you know, do so many different things. So, and you see some people with very, very amazing memory. You know, like you look at Prahlada Nanda Maharaj, he can recite pastimes from the Krishna book verbatim, word for word, without the Krishna book there. We had one experience, was it last year or the year before in Italy? No, in Mayapur. When we were doing different, with the GVC, they were doing different plays and dramas and things, and then they were doing Dvidvita the Gorilla. I won't explain the whole thing because it was really hilarious. But they were doing Dvidvita the Gorilla. And Prahlada Nanda Maharaj, he was the reciter, and he was reciting word for word from the Krishna book, just from memory. So some people can do things like that. Just from their memory, they can recite so many different things, or they can remember so many technical details or facts, you know, just like with Koteshwar, when he comes to a computer, you know, he does this, he does that, and I'm just like sitting scratching my head, what's he doing? You know, but he's just got, you know, got a capacity. But yet, even though someone may seem to have a far greater capacity than we do, still, they're limited. Even Lord Brahma, his capacity is, you know, extraordinary. His ability to remember, his ability to understand. Just like it's described that after he had been meditating upon the lotus, then he heard from Krishna this mantra. I've forgotten the mantra now. I say it 30 times a day and I've forgotten it. The first mantra of Gayatri. Om Bhuvah Svaha. So Om Bhuvah Svaha is describing the structure of the planets. Tat Savatru, the sun. Varanyam. And he's describing the whole structure of the universe. This, and from, it's said that from this verse, Lord Brahma created the universe. Just from hearing that, nothing else. I didn't have to get a book, a manual. Just like when you get a computer, you have to get a manual how to use the thing. Because they're so complicated sometimes. Or a car, sometimes so complicated. You know, how do you turn the radio on? It's not just a button anymore. You've got to pull out your remote control and do this and do that, you know. So sometimes these things are so complicated. But when you look at them, the degree of complexity is nothing compared to the complexity of this creation. And Lord Brahma created the whole thing just from hearing one mantra. So how intelligent is Lord Brahma? Yet still, it's finite. His intelligence, his wisdom is finite. Everything in the material universe has finite capacity. It's limited. But and even the greatest thing, even the universe itself, you know, and keeping in mind that this is a particularly small universe. This is one of the smallest universes that we're living in. There are universes, just like you can read that pastime in the Krishna book, when Lord Brahma went and knocked on Krishna's door, and he wanted to go visit Krishna, and he said, you tell Krishna that Lord Brahma's here. And so the gatekeeper went off and he said to Lord Krishna, oh, Lord Brahma is here. And he said, you go back and tell him which Lord Brahma. So he went back and he said to Lord Brahma, he said, which Lord Brahma? And Lord Brahma was like, what? What do you mean, which Lord Brahma? I'm Lord Brahma. So he said, tell him it's the four-headed Lord Brahma. So he went back and told him, oh, it's four-headed Lord Brahma. He said, okay, tell him to come in. So then when he came in to Krishna's courtyard, he saw there were millions of Lord Brahmas. Millions upon millions. And some had, you know, 10 heads and 100 heads and 1,000 heads and 1,000,000 heads. And Lord Brahma, interesting, you know, again, Krishna Shaktis themselves are unlimited. He has Parashya Shakti Vivitayu Sruti. He has unlimited potencies. And some of the potencies are, I mean, all the potencies of Krishna are unlimited. There's nothing they can't do. And they act in so many different ways. But by Krishna's Shakti, that Lord Brahma was seeing all of these Lord Brahmas, our Lord Brahma. He was seeing all of those Lord Brahmas, but the other ones were only seeing themselves in Krishna and Krishna's entourage. They weren't seeing. So Krishna was making this arrangement to humble him, because he was thinking that he is so great. But actually, in comparison to Krishna, we are so small. When we come beside Krishna, I think last time I gave class, I was using this I used this comparison of just like holding a candle to the sun. On Janmashtami night, for instance, we turn off all the lights on the altar, turn off all the lights in the temple, we have all the lamps on the altar. So, very nice. You get this very, very nice darshan from the lamps. But if we turn on the spotlights, who would notice the lamps? It wouldn't be very significant. So, in the same way, for a materialist to talk about their glories or to try to advertise their glories in front of Krishna is just bizarre. Because, you know, the materialists have no glories. And there's one verse in the Bhagavatam. It's in the 10th canto, I think it's in the 14th chapter. It explains how... I've forgotten the verse. But anyway, it's explaining how the persons in this world, they have no... Harava bhaktasya kuto mahadguna manatana siddhavata over here. It's explaining how... Samashati ye pada palava bravam mahapadam punyo yashamorare bravam buddhi vatsa. No, that's not the verse, it's something else. It describes how one who's taking. Anyhow, the last half of the verse I can remember. This verse says, Harava Bhaktasha says, however, one who's not a devotee of Krishna. That's right, it says, for one who's a devotee of Krishna, all the demigods and their exalted qualities as religion, knowledge, etc., have manifested in their body. And the demigods manifest in their body also. But it says, Harava Bhaktasya Kuto Mahadguna Manatenasi Dhavatobi. But for one who is not a devotee of Krishna, they have no good qualities. This is actually Prahlad Maharaj is saying this. He's praying, it's in the 7th canto, I think, 5th chapter. He's praying that, no, it's 5th canto. He's praying, it's the residents of Jambudweep offering prayers. So he's offering prayers to Lord Nrisingadeva. And he's saying that, for one who is not a devotee of Krishna has no good qualities, even if he is adept at the practice of mystic yoga or the honest endeavour of maintaining his family and relatives, he must be driven by his own mental speculation, served by his, serving his senses. And then he says, how can there be any good qualities in such a man? that, you know, we're not talking from our perspective, we're talking from the perspective of someone like Prahlad Maharaj, who's a pure devotee of Krishna. Very, very great devotee of Krishna. He's saying, you know, if one is not a servant of Krishna, if one is not a devotee of Krishna, how can there be any good qualities? You know, even the things we consider to be good qualities, they're not really good qualities, because why? Because they're using these things to serve their senses. And as long as something is being used to serve your senses, it's actually not a good quality, it's a bad quality, because it brings about your downfall. A good quality is something that elevates you. A good quality is something that pushes you towards Krishna. A good quality brings you success in life. But something that's going to push you down to the nether regions, push you down to the hellish planets, is this a good quality? Of course not. It's a bad thing, because it's making your life miserable. Ultimately, you know, in the short term, it may look like it's so wonderful. Oh, you know, look at all the things he can do. Look how much knowledge he has. Look at this. Look at that. You know, so beautiful. So this. So that. So wealthy. But if these things are not engaged in Krishna's service, then they're actually a burden. And they're just like a stumbling block on the path of devotional service. Because actually, devotional service is the business of the living entity. It is the only thing that is of any quality in this world. There's actually there's a discussion, I believe it's in the Krishna book, where Lord Brahma is explaining, he's saying that, you know, he says that this, the concept of auspicious and inauspicious in this material world, is simply mental speculation. Because everything in this material world is inauspicious. Every single thing. If it has no connection with Krishna, it is of no value. We need to develop, you know, if we really are serious about going back to Godhead, we need to develop this perception. It doesn't mean that we just reject everything. You know, this is what the Mayavadis do. Oh, material world is suffering, therefore I reject it. I renounce it all. No. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that this is a fool. Someone who does this is a fool. But actually, no. The true concept of renunciation, as explained by Rupa Goswami, is you take things and you use them to serve Krishna. You understand their proper utility. Because why? As Krishna says, aham savasya prabhu mata savam bhavatate. That everything in this, you know, material and spiritual world emanates from me. Aham, I, savasya prabhu, from my energies. Everything is coming from Krishna. So understanding this, we use these things to serve Krishna. This is real renunciation. It's understanding who is the proprietor. It's just like we're given so many things in this world. So many things we have. And some people more than others. Yet, if we use these things to serve our senses, they cause bondage. They bind us up and we become implicated in the cycle of karma, karmic reaction. And we become implicated in the cycle of birth and death. Yet, if we take these same things, just like we see, you know, some people, they play mridanga. And they're playing it for their sense enjoyment. They want to, you know, glorify their singing capacity or glorify their mridanga playing. Sometimes you see devotees, they like to, you know, stand in the center of the kirtan and, you know, look at me sort of thing. You know, I'm playing mridanga. You know, or just, you know, just by their manner, they're trying to draw attention to themselves. But then we see other devotees, they're playing mridanga with a view to glorifying Krishna. So even a so-called devotional practice, if it's not directed with a proper mentality, it can bring about further implication, further bondage in this material world. So, you know, it's important for devotees to develop this understanding that actually everything is here simply for the glorification of Krishna. And we see, Narad Muni, what's happening here is he's seeing the wonderful, extraordinary pastimes of Krishna. And what does he do? He then takes that and he goes off on his journey around the universe, preaching, telling everyone about Krishna. You know, he's gone to the Dham, you know, because there's a lot of devotees going to the Dham in the next few weeks. You know, I think Glenn's leaving soon, and who else is going? Someone else was talking just before he's leaving. Anyway, there's lots of devotees are going to the Dham soon. So the idea behind going to the Dham is not that we just go there and enjoy ourselves, you know, and spend all time at the market drinking lassi, or there's Bihari Lal's shop across the road. You know, you can sit down and listen to all the gossip on what's going on in Vrindavan. No, the idea is to go to Vrindavan and to, you know, get absorbed in the Dham, to hear about Krishna, to speak about Krishna, to focus on the chanting of the holy name, to focus upon doing devotional service, because it's said in the scriptures that every activity we do in the Dham is magnified 1,000 times So just imagine, you're sitting there, you're chanting 32 rounds a day or 64 rounds a day. That's like chanting 32,000 rounds a day or 64,000 rounds a day. You know, spend an hour or two a day reading Bhagavatam. It's actually, you know, they say 1,000 times, but actually the benefit's unlimited, because how can you estimate the benefit of chanting Hare Krishna even once? But it's unlimited, it's increasing even more. It's 1,000 times unlimited. And so the benefit is just, you know, you cannot calculate the benefit. It's just unimaginable how much benefit you're getting. So, you know, if we're going to the Dhamma, if we're, you know, spending time in the temple, whatever, any activity we're doing that's connected with Krishna, we need to be focused and try to, you know, get serious about this and understand the opportunity we have. And the same way, you know, understanding the benefit of activities connected with Krishna, why do we want to connect activities to anything else? You know, or looking at it from a different perspective, we see, like with Narad Muni or other great devotees, they see that everything is connected with Krishna. You know, so they're always engaged in, you know, Satam Kityantamam Yatantas Chad Vidabhadaha Namashantasimam Nitya Yukta Pashate. He says, the thoughts of my great was always glorifying me, Satam, always chanting my glories, endeavoring in great determination, these souls constantly bow down before me. So they're talking about the great souls, you know, Mahatmanastamampata, Devim, you know, how the great souls, that they're protected by the divine nature. Because they're always engaged in glorifying Krishna, they're always engaged in discussing Krishna's pastimes. Katyantas, chamam nityam, constantly, always. Always engaged in speaking about Krishna. You know, they're seeing how everything is connected with Krishna. This, you know, like the one time, not one time, Prabhupada explains in a purport how, I'm not sure where it is, how the devotee, the pure devotee of the Lord, sees Krishna in everything. He sees how, you know, just like you look at a tree. Yes, he sees the tree as a manifestation of Krishna's energy. He sees that the Supersoul is there. He may not be directly seeing the manifestation of the Supersoul, but he understands the Supersoul is there. Everything he sees, the connection with Krishna. So Narad Muni is the same. He's seeing everything connected with Krishna. And in this way, when he goes out, not seeing, oh, there is something very nice, I can enjoy this. This is the mentality of a conditioned living entity. This is the mentality of a materialist. How can I enjoy this situation? But a devotee sees, how can I use this situation for the glorification of Krishna? How can I use this situation for the satisfaction of Krishna? And this is the difference between a devotee and a materialist. Is like the material energy is there. What is the material energy for? Whose energy is it? Krishna's energy. It's not my energy. It's just like, you know, say for instance you're working for a company and you have a company car. You know, some companies are more strict than others, but if you have a company car and if you start to use that car for your own pleasure, you know, and not using it for the company, what happens? They take it away from you. Or, you know, maybe you have a computer at work, you know, and you spend all day playing computer games. You don't use it to do their business. It won't be long before they take the computer off you. You know, maybe they'll sack you too because you're not doing any work. You know? So as long as you know, when you're working for the company, as long as you further the purposes of the company, then you have a job. But as soon as you start to use that company to further your own purposes, you know, sometimes they call it embezzlement. You know? Because you see, well, they have so much money, they should give some to me. And so you start to steal the money. You know, steal facility from the company. Then they either, you know, then you put in jail or they sack you or something like that. So it's the same thing with Krishna, right? But he doesn't have to sack you or anything. He's just here in the material world. Right? There's no arrangement. We're already here. You know? But the choice is there. It's like either we use the facility we have for the satisfaction of Krishna, or we use this facility we have to try to satisfy our senses. Interesting thing is, though, you can never satisfy the senses. Not possible. The more you try to satisfy the senses, the more unsatisfied they become. You see this, you know, you just try to satisfy children. How do you go satisfying Kishori? Huh? Can you do that? The more you give her, the more she wants. Same with children. Any child, the more you give them, the more they want. So senses are like that. The more you give the senses, the more they want. Just like a fire. Dushparin and Alina Chah, Krishna says in the Gita. Just like, never satisfied and burn like fire. There's lust, he says, it's never satisfied, it burns like fire. And the more fuel you put on the fire, the bigger it gets. Like one of the techniques they have for controlling bushfires is they do like a backburn. And the idea behind the backburn is to burn up all the fuel. so that when the fire gets there, there's nothing to eat. So the senses are the same, right? If we keep trying to satisfy the senses, they just get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And more, you know, agitated, more and more disturbed. Give me more, give me more, give me more. And you'll never satisfy them. The only way to satisfy the senses is through service to Krishna. This is because this is actually the constitutional nature of the living. This is the constitutional position to be engaged in Krishna service. And when one is situated in their constitutional position, Prabhupada will sometimes use the story of the fish out of water. The fish can never be satisfied as long as it's out of water. As soon as you put it back in the water, satisfied. So the constitutional nature of the living entity is to serve Krishna. This is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So as long as the living entity is serving Krishna, then the living entity will be satisfied. But as soon as we stop this, as soon as we stop our natural activity, we don't serve Krishna anymore, then disturbance comes. And the more we try to satisfy ourselves this way, the more disturbed we become. So it's in our best interest to try to cultivate the mood of personalities like Narada and Lala Maharaj, all these great devotees. Obviously, you know, it's not like we're going to become Narada Muni overnight. It takes time, you know, especially because, you know, we hang on to it, all these different attachments. But the more rapidly we are able to give up these attachments, then the more rapidly we progress in devotional service. The only thing that's holding us back. There's a story that Indra Maharaj tells sometimes. There's a story about a guru, and his disciple comes up to him and he says, "You know, the Guru Maharaj is a material nature. She's so difficult. She holds on so tight. She won't let go." And the guru didn't say anything about this to his foolish disciple. How will I ever teach him anything? So then the next day he comes back, and the guru, he's got his arms around a tree and he's calling, "Oh tree, please let go, my dear tree, please let go." And the guru, the disciple comes up and he's like, "What's going on? Is Guru Maharaj gone mad or something?" And he comes and says, "Guru Maharaj, the tree's not holding you, you're holding the tree." And then the guru spins and he says, "And that's right, you rascal. Material nature is not holding you, you're holding material nature." As long as we have this desire to enjoy the material world, material nature has its power over us. But as soon as we want to surrender to Krishna, as soon as we give up this attachment, as soon as we let go of material nature no longer has any power over us. And actually we see, instead of keeping us away from Krishna, material nature takes us towards Krishna. And actually, not only material nature, the yoga mind. Prabhupada sometimes also uses the analogy, just like the electrician, the expert electrician. He can use the same power. "Hari bol, little ladies, you're getting too noisy. Gurangi. Shh." He explains to the expert electrician, electrical engineer, he can use the same energy, electricity, for heating and for cooling. Just by some manipulation, he just changes it around. Same energy, just by moving heat one way or moving, just like you use a reverse cycle air conditioner. What's it doing? It's, you know, at least the way they explain it, they have the freon gas in it, and somehow or other it picks up heat on this side and it moves the heat to the other side, right? And that way it's taking the heat out of this room and blowing it outside. And then when you want to heat, it turns around and does the opposite. So the same way with the Lord's energy. For him, it's all the same thing, matter, spirit. It's all not like it's Mayavadi. No, because ultimately it's all spirit. Because it comes from the Supreme Spirit. You know, we perceive it as matter. It's just our perception. What's that verse in the Gita? Matraspasas kunteya sitoshna sukadukada. Matraspasas, just sensory perception. We perceive it as being happiness and distress. We perceive it as being heat or cold. But it's not. It's none of these things. Krishna, you know, when the living entity decides to surrender to Krishna, when the living entity actually makes tangible steps, then the same energy that's keeping Krishna away, keeping the living entity away from Krishna, then turns around and assists us in coming closer to Krishna. And so we see here by seriously engaging these pastimes in the Bhagavatam are wonderful, because they're just giving us this opportunity to appreciate Krishna's extraordinary pastimes. It's so amazing the things he does, you know. And he's acting like a human to bewilder the minds of the atheists. Even like it's described later on in the 11th canto. Maybe it's the 12th canto. When he left, the material world and went back. Actually, he doesn't leave, but you know, when he gave up visible pastimes to return back to the spirit, to his spiritual realm, which he didn't return back because he was there already, and he didn't leave here because he's always here. Yeah. But you know, these descriptions are given to give us some understanding that he's going from prakat to aprakat. He's going from manifest pastime to unmanifest pastime. But actually, his pastimes are always manifest. We just can't see them. Just like you go to Vrindavan, the pastimes are constantly going on in Vrindavan. The pastimes are constantly going on in Mayapur. The pastimes are constantly going on in Turi. There's never any end to it. It's just we don't have the vision. That's all. It's us that's limited. It's just like, you know, sometimes you hear people saying, oh, the cloud is covered by sun. Oh, sorry, the sun is covered by the clouds. I'm doing that a bit today. The sun is covered by clouds, but actually, what's the capacity of a cloud to cover the sun? It has no capacity. And in the same way, what's the capacity of the material energy to cover Krishna? It has no capacity. It's just our eyes that are covered. So because we're identifying with the material nature, our eyes are covered and we cannot perceive or we cannot understand the pastimes of Krishna. But by reading these pastimes and repeating these pastimes, just like there's a benediction at the end. Lord Hari is the ultimate cause of the universal creation, maintenance and destruction. My dear King, anyone who chants about, hears about or simply appreciates the extraordinary activities he performed in this world, which are impossible to imitate, will surely develop devotion to the Supreme Lord, the bestower of liberation. So, Sukadeva Goswami is giving us a benediction there. You know? And that applies to every single pastime of Krishna. We just hear about, we just chant them, we remember them, we appreciate them. Who could not appreciate these glorious pastimes? They're just extraordinary, the things that Krishna does. You know? But if someone's so foolish they can't appreciate them, then they're destined to stay here for a long, long time. So it's in our best interest to read the Bhagavatam, to read Krishna book, to read these different pastimes, remember these different pastimes. Just like, you know, in the morning we're chanting this Dhamma Dharastika, and it's talking about these wonderful pastimes of Krishna, how he performed these pastimes as a baby. God is a baby? Try and explain that to someone from another religious tradition. They would really struggle to understand that. They would really struggle to accept that. But, you know, Krishna can do anything. There's nothing he can't do. If you really think that God is the unlimited, supreme, you know, all-powerful, you know, because we hear many different descriptions about God from different faiths, from, you know, also in our own faith, yet we see that a lot of people really can't come to terms with that. Just like we see, I have been told, I mean, I don't know so well, but I have been told, actually I remember I was speaking to one gentleman at the airport in Bombay one time. He was Mohammedan, and he just couldn't accept that Allah or God has a form. And the understanding I have is because they're trying to understand form through material senses, you know. So yes, Krishna doesn't have a form like this. Just like one time Prabhupada was giving class in America. It was America or Africa? Anyway, I was giving class, I think it was in America, and someone stood up at the back and asked a question. It was a black body person. He's saying, you're saying that your God, he has a black body. And Prabhupada said, yes, but not like that. And he was pointing at the man. Yes, it is blackish. It's described as being blackish, but not like the things we can understand in this world. Like Krishna is described, you know, he was on the planet for 124 years, but he did not age past the age of 16. Have you seen anyone else who does that? They're all trying to do that, spending, you know, fortunes on you know, they have all these, like, I was just where was it the other day? When I was in Sydney, we were going to the supermarket, and we went to the sort of beauty clinic. You know, we stopped at the lights waiting to go around the corner. There's a beauty clinic there, and I saw. Something about doctors or something. Then I realised this is one of those cosmetic surgery places where they go, you know, and they get their lips sucked up, and they, you know, put all the stuff under their skin so they get the high cheekbone effect and all the spending. They get this done during their lunch hour. And I remember I saw one lady a while ago. It looked like someone punched her in the nose because her eyes were all puffed up like this, you know. And the extremes they go to. And they spend a lot of money to try and make the body look forever young. But as Prabhupada was saying, often the death rate is 100%. Everyone's going to die who has a material body. You cannot make this body live forever. Yet Krishna, he stayed on this planet for 124 years and did not age past 16 years old. But that's not just, you know, just to say that, that's not, well, God never ages, you know, he always looks like a young boy. Oh, you know, you're 55, you look like you're 12 years old, you must be God. Some people use this kind of logic. You know, it's called kutaka, bad logic. It's not good logic. That's one of the features of Krishna. I mean, Krishna is just unlimited in every way. He has unlimited wealth, he has unlimited strength, he has unlimited fame, he has unlimited beauty. Who do you know can lift a mountain for 7 days and hold on the little pinky of his left hand? Who can do that? Even Charles Atlas couldn't do that. Arnold Schwarzenegger can't do that. You know, the big muscle-building person can't do that. And that's just one of the things he does. He can expand himself into millions and millions of forms. He creates the entire material creation just by thinking about it. Krishna's just extraordinary. We need to appreciate more and more and more all the time. Just, you know, meditate upon these pastimes, read these pastimes, speak about these pastimes to each other. And just, you know, try to, you know, enter into the understanding. Just like Narad Muni here, he's just coming around and he's becoming so astounded. And the more you read these pastimes, the more you think about these pastimes, the more you'll become astounded at Krishna. How wonderful he is, how great he is. And the more we become astounded about how great Krishna is, automatically we become more aware of how small I am. This is really, you know, humility is key to knowledge. This is described by Prabhupada in the Gita. Without humility, there is no possibility of knowledge. Without humility, there is no possibility of understanding Krishna. We'll never understand him completely. We'll understand him in part, but without humility, even that won't come. Because pride will block us from understanding. So we'll finish. There's no purport to this verse. Any questions at all?